Welcome to Mrigashira, a podcast that communicates with communicators. This podcast is a tribute to our fantastic fellow professionals, colleagues, and friends. I'm Charu Raizada, and this podcast is brought to you in association with DigiTales. Today's guest on Mrigashira is David Nirbin Scott, an internationally acclaimed business strategist, author, entrepreneur, advisor to emerging companies, and public speaker. David joins me today to talk about his new book that he co-authored with his daughter, and it's called Fanocracy: Turning Fans into Customers and Customers into Fans. We're going to talk about how this book came about and what we can learn from it. Stay with us on Mrigashira.
Hello and welcome to Mrigashira, David.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Such an honor to have you. With 12 books to your credit and each one being a huge success, featuring on the Business Week bestseller list, Wall Street Journal bestselling book list, my personal fan moment here, actually. I'm intrigued by your latest book, Fanocracy: Turning Fans into Customers and Customers into Fans, which you wrote with your daughter. How did the idea of Fanocracy take birth?
Well, it was interesting because you're right, I've written 12 books, and some of my earlier books talked a lot about social media and social media marketing and social media PR. And I got to realize about 5 years ago that social media was becoming in many ways a destructive force. Here in my country, it's used for political polarization. The algorithms have become actually, I believe, very dangerous. And at the same time, marketing and public relations people were starting to abuse the channel of social media and sending out yet another LinkedIn post or Facebook post, trying to convince people to buy products and services. And so I wanted to really dig into what's changing in the world. And what I realized is that all of us are fans of something. You know, it could be an author or a musician or a sports team, or we like to play a sport. Maybe we like to run or bike or go fishing or, you know, whatever it is. And I wanted to dig into how and why people become fans. And I ended up working on the book with my daughter, Reiko. She's now 28 years old. She's a medical doctor. So it was a great partnership to work with her because she and I are so different.
Imagine a medical doctor. That's so awesome. And I kind of relate to the book thing. When you're a fan of something, you tend to draw lessons from that, understand things and put things in a better perspective. So in Fanocracy, you talk about ways to use real-time strategies to spread ideas, influence minds. I think we could all do with some tips here.
So it's interesting with this idea of working with Reiko, who's a medical doctor, about the fact that we humans are hardwired to want to be part of a tribe of like-minded people. And it's very, very interesting to me that that it actually goes back tens of thousands of years with humans, because when we're part of our tribe, we feel safe and comfortable. But when we're not with our tribe, we feel vulnerable. So from the perspective of developing fans, what's important to remember is that human element and the idea that once people believe they're part of a group of people, if your company or your organization can create a powerful bond with people, that's when they truly become fans. And we've seen examples in all different kinds of industries. One of my favorite examples is Hagerty Insurance. They're an automobile insurance company. And I find that to be interesting because many people say to me, but David, my business can't develop fans. We're, you know, whatever, we're a B2B company, we're a commodity products company, we're an insurance company. But Hagerty Insurance has millions of fans. They sell classic car automobile insurance. And so from the social media side, they have a fabulous YouTube channel with over 1 million subscribers. They've created, in a sense, their own social media channel because they have an online driver's club, the Hagerty Driver's Club, with 650,000 members. And all of that has created for Hagerty the largest classic car auto insurance company in the world. And I had a chance to interview McKeel Hagerty, who's the entrepreneurial owner of the company. And he told me that developing fans is exactly his strategy, because he realized that he couldn't do what everybody else does and spend money on advertising or just try to hire more salespeople. He went the route of developing fans, and he did a great job with it.
So it's very interesting. You talked initially about Twitter and how it's being used for polarization and all sorts of things, and not really, you know, leading to any concrete or constructive discussions. So it brings me to a question, and in today's times when truth seems to have walked out of our dictionary, literally, how would you encourage brands to be honest in their communication?
Yeah, that, I mean, I think you've hit on a very important point here. Truth has really become something that is not accepted as much as it was. And I think ultimately that the people and the organizations that are always truthful, always truthful, will have a great benefit from doing that. So what does that mean in practical ways? What it means is, it is, if your company has some kind of problem, it's best to be truthful with your customers about what's going on, and not try to hide behind something else. I love the story, we actually put this in the book, about Kentucky Fried Chicken in the UK. And Kentucky Fried Chicken in the UK, if you can believe it, they ran out of chicken. So they were a chicken restaurant with no chicken. And what happened was their logistics company, they changed the logistics company, and the new company wasn't able to deliver chickens in the right way. So Kentucky Fried Chicken could have blamed another company and said, oh, it's not our fault, it's someone else's fault, but they didn't. They accepted responsibility and they said, we're a chicken company without chicken, how crazy is that? And by doing that, they were able to build more fans, because people are willing to accept a mistake, but over the long term, they're not willing to accept people who lie.
Well, that's even the first rule of crisis: always be honest and always be truthful. But you know, it's a double-edged sword. We still find CEOs, brands, companies reticent because they feel that sometimes truth could backfire on them. What would you advise them?
I mean, I think that it's very, very, very important to make sure that you are being open and honest with your employees, and you're being open and honest with your customers. And the employee one is a very important one, because if you're the CEO of a company, you're only one person, and all of the people who work at your company are, in a sense, the ambassadors of your company to your customers. And there's a lot of CEOs who don't even tell the truth to their employees. And I'm reminded of the opposite of that. I'm reminded of a company that always tells the truth with their employees, and it's a company called HubSpot. And I happen to be on the advisory board of HubSpot, and I'm friends with the co-founder and executive chairman, Brian Halligan. And what he told me is very interesting. He said that we're so truthful with people that everybody in the company is considered an insider from the perspective of the New York Stock Exchange, which is where they're listed, because they're so honest about what's going on with the company, and they provide so much data to employees about what's going on with the company, that everybody in the company is considered the same as the executives, as an insider, because of the amount of information they know. And because they know so much about the company, they're able to be truthful, all of those 4,000 employees, to their customers. And that has been very, very successful for them. The company has been growing like crazy. They're going to do over $1 billion of revenue this year. And they only started the business back in 2006. So that's incredible growth. And more interesting than that to me is that the HubSpot employees voted the company the number one company to work for in the entire United States by a company called Glassdoor, was the organization that did the research. And so the idea of honesty is appreciated by employees. They voted HubSpot the number one company to work for in all of the United States. And then it's also appreciated by customers. And that's one of the main reasons why HubSpot is growing so quickly, is because they're totally honest with employees and with customers.
Yeah, so talking about employees, in Thanocracy, you encourage to put the needs of people ahead of all else, often a tough ask. And if we connect this to employees, how can companies walk the extra mile towards creating a fandom culture internally? I know you've just touched upon that, but I'm very intrigued to know more about the whole fandom culture which you refer to.
I think besides the idea of honesty, I think one of the most important things is that a company should trust their employees to do the right thing. I mean, clearly you need to hire good people, but assuming that you've hired good people, you should trust them to do their job correctly and not try to micromanage the way they do their work. Again, going back to HubSpot, because they're one of my favorite examples of this, one of the ways that they trust employees is around their vacation policy. In fact, they have no vacation policy. The policy is take as much time as you need. So they don't tell people you have 2 weeks vacation every year or 3 weeks vacation every year. And whenever you want to take vacation, you have to fill out this form. They don't do that. That's what most companies do. Instead, they say, if you need to take some time off, we know you work hard, take the time off. Whatever you need, you can take off. And maybe there are a few people who abuse that, but then those aren't the right people for the company anyway, and they're asked to leave. But the vast majority of the people who work there appreciate that kind of trust, and they therefore do a great job for the company.
So considering most of us struggle when it comes to effective listening, what particularly caught my attention is the call to listen to rehumanize. Tell us more about that.
You know, recently, I think, especially with online communications, it's so easy for us to not even think about the customer on the other side of the transaction. You know, we think, I'm just doing business and I'm watching the revenue, I'm watching the profit, you know, and so many companies are run with that kind of MBA approach to business of just focusing on the numbers rather than focusing on the humanity of the customers. And I think that there's a huge benefit of humanizing the business in such a way that your focus is totally on the people you're doing business with, the customers that you're doing business with. And understanding that they're individual people, and understanding that they have needs, and understanding that great customer support is the ultimate form of public relations, because when people love your company, they tell other people. They tell other people on social media. They tell other people when they meet them in person. So there's nothing better from a public relations perspective than having people who love your business, because they're out there talking about you.
I just read this interesting piece on lessons to be learned from psychology when it comes to customer experience, and minutes before we got onto this call. And what caught my eye was this line about customer service is not about building loyalty, but about mitigating disloyalty. What's your take on that?
That's an interesting thought. I've never really thought about it that way. I would look at it in a different way. I'm not sure that I would agree with either of those things. I think that great customer support is about building fans. And so what are some manifestations of fandom? I think that people who wear a t-shirt which has your company's logo on it, or put a sticker on their computer with your company's logo on it, they're fans. People who share on social media about what you're doing, those are fans. People who tell their friends or their business colleagues about what you do and the fact that they love what you do, those are fans. So I think that the more that you can build fans, the better. And that's really what this is all about in my mind.
Very well put. So we walk into 2022, what will be the new rules of marketing and PR?
You know, going forward, we started our conversation a few minutes ago about social media, and I believe quite strongly that the social media algorithms are dangerous, especially the Facebook algorithm is very dangerous, because the Facebook algorithm, I've noticed over the last few years, is very polarizing, but recently, due to some books and some other things that have come out, it's been proven that the Facebook algorithm is designed to reward negativity, because negativity gets people to stay on the Facebook platform longer. So I believe in 2022, it's going to be very important to understand how those algorithms work, how Facebook in particular, but the other social networks as well, how the algorithms work, and just make sure that if you are using social media as one of your forms of public relations and marketing and communications, that you understand what you're getting yourself into. And I think ultimately, it's better to focus on your own content real estate, like your own blogs, your own videos, your own website, your own information, than it is to focus on being at the mercy of the algorithms from the social networking companies.
Thank you so much, David, for making the time to talk to us on Megashira.
Oh, my pleasure. It's so good to speak with you.
Hope you enjoy listening to Megashira, a podcast for communication folks. Do share your suggestions and feedback on Megashira at digitales.co.in. Have a great week ahead, and do not forget to tune in next week. Adios.